last night, and I've introduced the yellow. The yellowing. So I'm going to say a little bit about the yellowing. I'm not quite sure I've got to say about it, but we'll see. First, historically, it's quite interesting that the early alchemical text, this is pre-15th century maybe, treat the yellowing as one of the major phases. So you've got the black, the white, the yellow, and the red. So it's very definitely up in the earlier stuff. It definitely needs to be a sort of word, it's a quartet, that's not quite the right word, is it? What word am I looking for? Four, you know, it's a set of four things, four phases. Then it becomes a trinity. As time goes on, as we move into the 15th and 16th century, the yellow tends to disappear from most, or is very cursory treated. And we end up with a sort of trinity of the black, white, and red. To some extent, this is perhaps put down to the influence of Christianity. We move from a square to a trinity. And it's quite an interesting move, actually. And of course, they're quite different. In a way, a trinity implies a sort of movement upwards that a square doesn't. Yes, a square is more like a mandala. Mandalas, I mean, sometimes mandalas are round, but actually quite often the middle of the mandala is a square. And a square implies something quite different, really. It's not necessarily ascending as such. Anyway, so the yellow tends to disappear more and more as we move into, as alchemy moves into more recent time. Yellow is a very interesting colour in its connotations, I think. Because it has very diverse and sometimes seemingly antagonistic connotations. So it's associated sometimes with spring, with sort of spring flowers. It's obviously associated very strongly with solar, with the sun, with brightness. If you think about halos and angelic in a way, it's associated with sort of joy, exuberance, energy, all these sorts of things in yellow. Yeah? But it's also associated with quite a lot of negative things. For instance, the cowardice, we call someone yellow, don't we? And they're a coward. The internationally recognized black flag for a plague ship or ship carrying contamination is yellow, so it designates a contagious, deadly disease. It's obviously related to aging, things yellow, don't they? You know, paper and even lovely white linen that's put away for too long starts to yellow. Our teeth and our nails and even our skin starts to yellow. And yellowing is also associated with, again, putrefaction, rotting, aging, decomposition. Instead, and don't ask me to explain this, that yellow is inside the white, inherent in the white. We can sort of, if we look at these three phases together, we can sort of see what happens is that we move from this negrido state to a state of reflection, this silver state, a state of distance, this lunar. So we're quite a long way from the earth, yeah? We've put a big distance between us and the earthly concerns. I think this is very interesting from our point of view as meditators. Because one of the things that we prize and one of the things that we tend to try and cultivate, quite rightly, is these sort of dhyanas. And of course, the higher dhyanas are actually describe as the formless, the I-ness. So when we're moving into a place without form, we're moving into a place that's altogether away from the earth, away from earthly concerns. Yeah. And is pure in the end, perhaps, it's just pure reflection without the image, if such a thing can exist, yeah? It's just a pure awareness without the image itself in it, yeah? It's just the silver, it's just the white. White is a colour, a white landscape, a moonscape or a snowscape. It's fairly undifferentiated, isn't it? You know, everything becomes pretty much the same. And this is a little bit like this sort of saturated qualities we get in the dhyana. Yeah, a single landscape. There's not much differentiation in it. But this is what happens, and in alchemically speaking, quite often the whole thing comes to an end at the silvering, at the whitening. This is the production of the first stone very often. And the first stone has the ability, and this is, of course, you have to, this is alchemical language. The first stone has the ability to turn base metal into silver. So it's quite useful. Yeah, it's very useful. And sometimes the whole thing just comes to an end there. It's enough. So sometimes for us as meditators, when we start getting these higher experiences, maybe experience of dhyana, maybe experience of sort of pure awareness, we call it a pure... The clue is in the words, in a sense, pure awareness, yeah. This idea of purity, there's this second purification, and it's not our original purification, but it's the purification of the whitening, yeah. So when we start getting these experiences, which are, you know, very valuable and positive experiences, sometimes that's it, we just think, okay, we've done our, that's it, we've done the spiritual bit, we've done the part. Alchemy warns against this. It warns against it, at stopping at the whitening. And for the whitening to move back, when I was thinking about this, I was very much reminded of, as though this is coming into the libido, the last stage. It's sometimes described as the dawning, a dawn. So the libido is when the sun's come up. But this yellowing stage is from when first light to when the sun actually rises. This yellowing stage. But I was reminded when I was thinking about this, this little saying, I've always loved this little saying, when in the Zen tradition, they talk about returning to the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hand. This is after the enlightenment, yeah? We have our insight, and then we return to the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hand. So when we stop at the silver, we don't return to the marketplace. In order to return to the marketplace, we have to move through the yellowing and into the libido. Because the libido is this, well, we'll talk about it tomorrow, but, you know, it's this being fully in the world, fully in the glory of the world, in a sense. But for that to happen, we have to move through the yellow in it, and they warn against moving too quickly from the white to the red. Yeah, they warn us that we shouldn't move too quickly. And I mean, it is interesting that the yellow became increasingly ignored as time went on. And of course, they moved, Christianity gained more and more influence over the alchemical mind, as it were. And of course, in Christianity, the end result isn't a return to the marketplace, it's heaven. And of course, heaven, in a way, is a continuation of the or is an intensification of the white in the face, in the funny sense, if you see what I mean. We're not getting back into the world. The whole aim of the opus then becomes to leave the world. Traditionally, the aim of the alchemical opus is to save the world, not to be saved and go somewhere else, if you see the difference. Yeah, it's not to die and go to heaven. It's to save the world, redeem the world itself, us along with it. But a redemption's here and now, not in some afterlife. So the other thing that's very strongly associated with the yellowing is sulphur. Yeah, so sulphur is it's said that sulphur is essential to the work, and sulphur is found in everything. And when I was thinking about this, I thought, oh, this is very interesting. Sulphur is found in everything, this is what they say. Everything that lives has sulphur. And when you think about this double sort of doubleness of yellow, yeah, meaning so many different things, I started to think, well, actually, what you've got here is a moving in an acceptance of how things really are. From a Buddhist point of view, you've got an acceptance of impermanence, yeah, because as soon as something comes into being, of course, it's already moving towards death and moving out of being. Yeah. This is this is impermanence, what we've got. Yellow, in a way, symbolizes, or we could, one way of imagining it, we should say it is the motif of impermanence. So it's a movement from these exalted spiritual states to moving back into the world and accepting how the world really is, yeah, which is impermanent. Yeah, you know, it comes, it flowers beautifully, and it decays. And this is how things are, and the yellow inclines us towards it, and this is the sulphur. So the sulphur rots everything. You know, sulphur is, of course, it's associated with the devil, isn't it, in Christianity? So when you get the split, when you get this dualism of the pure versus the impure, of course, you get this psychological split. All that's, I'm going to say bad, that's not quite the right word, but anyway, once you've got absolute perfection in God, you have to split off everything that doesn't concord with that image. So it gets split off into the devil, and the devil is kind of chemical, is sulfur, is rotting down, is impermanence, if you like, it's reminding us of the impermanence. And when we smell of sulfur is when something is rotten, so it reminds, and we quite often have this, we might be in a situation at work, say, we kind of smell a rat, don't we? It smells rotten, or in a relationship, and it smells rotten, something not quite right about it. And it's this smell of sulfur, So it brings back the negredo, but it brings back the negredo balanced with the solar. So it's also balanced with a very positive, warm, love, light energy. Yeah, it's got the solar comes back in, and it comes back in. It's heavy, it's male. So the lunar is usually understood as feminine, and this yellowing, the male, well, we had the king coming back, didn't we? The king coming back into it, and it's described as fatty and bodily, yeah. It's the male element coming back in, bringing us back into the world. And it's the image, probably the most common image, I think, and I've mentioned this last night. It's milk turning into cheese. And of course, a lot of cheese has a very strong smell, doesn't it? You know, in fact, some of the most delicious cheese, it's more or less stinks more or less unbearably, doesn't it? You know? Mm-hmm. So it's telling us something that actually the real, I was going to say, the real delight of living always have a whiff of sulfur to them. Yeah, they always have a whiff of sulfur to them, the real delight. Yeah? When something's totally pure, actually it's anodyne, isn't it? It's not of any interest anymore in a funny sort of way. So our practice, I think, we were talking about in terms of our personal practice, I think a lot of us, quite rightly, I don't mean this in any sort of negative way at all, when we first start meditating or when we first start getting interested in Buddhism, we're very seduced by the luna, we're very seduced by the idea of purity, this idea of a sort of pristine, that we can... I think many people get involved in Dharma practice and meditation practice because they like the idea of sort of ascending and sort of being above it all, yeah? They're kind of above all of the daily troubles of life, you know, above all our own emotions, in a sense. They like this idea of being able to look down on themselves and others with great compassion. You know, and not be sort of sensitive to it, but in a way not really actually affected by it. You know, they're above it, they're beyond it, they're above it. This is the sort of image. I think when I first got involved in Buddhism, I rather like this idea, you know, that I could sort of be above it all and it's sort of wise and. And then I think at some point we kind of realise actually that our calling or our why are we here is not to sort of be above things, but to be involved with things. Yeah? And I think I've already mentioned, I was mentioning the other night, that I think these days as the world, whatever that means, the world, really needs us to be involved. You know, we need to get stuck in, we need to really be in the marketplace or whatever image you want to use. Yeah. This is what is needed. It doesn't need us all to be, so anyway. You can make of what you like. So a bit of yellowing is good. It brings us into the reality. It brings us back into the reality, the nitty-gritty of life. But it's sort of balanced. It's a balance between, pleasure, pain, however you want to put it. It's got both elements in it. It's unlike the negredo, unlike the whitening, which are the two... They've been separated, haven't they? There's a separation. This is how El Camino proceeds. It separates and then conjoins. So this yellowing is a sort of another conjunction, bringing everything back together again. Yeah. In preparation for the final, I say final stage. If we've got a square model, we can't really say it is the final stage, but it's one... movement around the mandala or one movement around the house. Some reason I put this image of a house in my mind is that sort of stroll around the house and then stroll around it once. I would really encourage you to find your own associations with yellow. yellow might have a very particular association for you, might have a particular memory for you. I remember when I was thinking about this, which I haven't thought of for years, I remember when I was a kid, you know, I think most kids go through this, don't they, at different points, it might be different colours, but certainly for quite a long time, I was really into yellow. It was my favourite colour, you know, yellow. It's quite funny because my son is 15, a couple of years, I think he's kind of got over it now, but a couple of years ago, he was quite obsessed with orange. Yeah, orange, really obsessed with orange. And I wouldn't dream of wearing yellow now. Well, I might dream of it. I quite like to have a dream of it, but I don't have any yellow shirts. You know? Blue shirts and green shirts and white shirts. But I haven't got any yellow shirts. So anyway, it sounds a bit, maybe it sounds a bit superficial, but actually, it was really quite interesting for me to remember this sort of passion I had for yellow. I don't know how old I was, I think I was quite young. I definitely had a real passion for yellow, you know. And actually, even here on this retreat, this idea of, I found this idea of yellowing really, really useful, actually. Hillman points out in his, when he's talking about yellowing, I don't know why I even mentioned it, I'm not quite sure. He's talking about his association with green, so it's coming, and green being of earth, and he points out that in England, the electrical wiring, of course, the earth wire, which is neutral, so it's neither positive or negative, it's a neutral, the earth wire, is, of course, green and yellow, isn't it? The wire, which is, you know, quite interesting in and of itself, you know. Whereas there used to be, I think it used to be red, black, green. Is that what it still is? Red, black, green?
Brown.
Anyway, So you can just sort of play with these colours, and as I've been suggesting all week or nearly 2 weeks now. But anyway, that these colours are in and of themselves kind of archetypal. What I mean by that, that they in and of themselves can activate the psyche in particular ways. So that just as these figures that we might use, whether they're, you know, Buddhas or Bodhisattvas or figures out of myth or figures out of fairy stories can activate the psyche, well, colours seem to have this power themselves to activate the psyche. So really, whatever we say about these colours, it's just an invitation to start investigating them for yourself, you know. What is this yellow? What is this yellow? What does yellow mean to and for you, you know? What can it do for you? What's it got to offer? So it might wake up a part of you that's gone a bit to sleep. Sometimes a colour will wake up a part of you that's been sort of neglected or lost somewhere. Yeah? And yellow is an interesting colour, of course. And the fourth colour, isn't it? I think I've already mentioned that the cultures that have yellow or green is always the fourth or fifth colour, and blue. So it leads into the other colours, actually. So you get black, white, red, which are always the three basic colours in all cultures. Then you get yellow or green as the fourth, or green or yellow as the fifth. And then you get the blue. And then the blue opens up into the whole rest of the colour spectrum. And so in a funny sort of way, if this makes any sense still, yellow is a sort of gateway into the other colour. And of course we've got Ratnasambhava. It is Ratnasambhava's yellow, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's the yellow Buddha. He's in that part of the mandala. If you're interested in this, you can start also looking at what are the qualities of Ratnasambhava. Yeah. So we'll do a little meditation together.